Past players, past legends, past legends.
Well, it was a surprise. We'd never spoken about it, right? So I was fully engaged to keep going. And but you know, I think in the end, I don't really remember any attempt to change my mind or anything like that. No. I think it was all.
It's just funny that you two are such a partnership.
That you went out and made a decision.
Right from Campbelltown High, Sweethearts and all that bit. It's quite amusing. Yeah.
Well, maybe it's because I knew she'd have no objections whatsoever. Yeah. Maybe I did do that instinctively, but it was a surprise, and then by doing it the way that I did it. There was virtually the season had started. There was no farewells. There was no see you laters. You know, like it was just decision made, announcement, and everyone moved on. And
did you go and watch much that year?
Hmm. No.
Okay.
This goes to a bit of my mentality as well. Is that it's very line in the sand for me. You know, like I'm either all in or I'm all out. You know, like, and so I just felt that what was the point? What could I contribute to a setup that was already established? You know, everyone was in position. You know, I didn't feel that. I simply felt like it was time to go, and once you've made that call, just get out of the way. Yep. That's the best policy, I reckon.
Did Craigie sort of not try to talk you around to staying playing, but just being involved with the group from a leadership point of view?
No, because I reckon Craigie's mindset was, I'm invested in the youth. You know, like so he brought. Yep. Brett James in as vice captain. He was clearly going to be the captain of the club. He had a whole group of young pups that he was nurturing. And I feel like, and he had Macca, you know, like an Aishi. So I think he had enough really
experience,
school experience in the mix. Scans, I think, was still playing maybe. He wasn't lacking enough balance, but he was invested in the kids.
And Macca was always going to still be the main one in that regard.
Macca was the captain.
Yeah.
He was already super influential. I don't think that they didn't need what I could bring. You know, he never said that, but it was that was an obvious part of the dynamic, and that suited me.
I know she was struggling with his back then too,
Was coaching potentially on the radar?
So this is a unique element, probably for me. You know, like this is again. I remember it really clearly. I made a decision that when I ended playing, I didn't want to be defined by footy. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I didn't want it to be in football. And
that's so ironic in the end, KT. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was looking for a clean break.
Yep.
And the radio exposure, the two or three years I'd had already had filled me with some hope that I could make something of that. And as it turned out, the moment that I was a sales rep for SAFM when I retired, and I think within 4 years I was general manager of the station. So it happened really quickly.
Bloody quickly, really.
Post retirement, and I didn't. I don't really know how. I do know how. I know what was going on was Austereo was in a massive growth phase. They were building radio, they were buying radio stations interstate. And what that was creating was a vacuum inside SAFM, because a lot of the SAFM people were getting drawn into the national arena. And that left opportunities for the next generation of SAFM executives. And so I just rolled up the line and I was very, very fortunate to be there at that time. And, you know, I did the work and I was trying to be good at it, but it was just timing was fantastic.
How about the council, though? How much did working there, Nord Council, influence your thoughts and all that as well, KT?
So Nord Council was, like, it was very convenient.
Yeah.
Right? So I got to be honest, when I started there, I was straight out of school. I was in and out of uni. I was trying to do uni, trying to play footy, trying to work. I'd got married early. I dropped uni 3 times, actually. So the council, and I was really invested in playing good footy.
Yeah.
I was really thinking a lot about that, and the council was a good, convenient working environment for, just to learn a little bit about what office life was like. I stayed 7 years there. I was, the management was good, but I contemplated a career in local government.
Yeah,
but I do. It didn't really excite me.
Yep.
When I went to Melbourne, that was a natural break. It was like, I didn't pursue local government when I got to Victoria. So that was the end of that, really.
Okay, so Ostero, you've worked your way up there. And in terms of what you learnt in that way, how did that influence your thoughts then later when you've decided footy admin, you're going to have a real crack at it?
Yeah, well, so at this stage, I'd done 20 years in radio. So I worked my way up to lead SAFM and Triple M Adelaide. So a merger had occurred and I was running both of those stations. And then I was given an opportunity to move into the national arena with Triple M. So I went to Sydney with Patty and the kids, and we lived there for a while. And then we went to Melbourne. And so it was a national role, and it was pretty exciting and very, very full on. Paul Thompson, who was a constant in all of this, so he then left Ostereo and went to a group called DMG Radio.
Yes.
He, when he did that, he brought me across. He got me out of Ostereo, put me in charge of 5AA whilst we were waiting to build the Nova network. And so he had to go through a process of buying all the licenses for a national network from the ground up. But he spent that 2 or 3 years building his formation team. So the best sales guy, a corporate guy who'd get with, the best programmer, the best engineers, and he put him into 5AA. We're all in 5AA, just waiting for the opportunity to build this national FM network, which we did. And that was an absolute career highlight. And so I guess what your question was, how did all of that prepare me for the big job of my career, which was the CEO of Port Adelaide?
And you had a taste at Nord a bit as well, there, which gave you a bit of a thing there. Had a good person helping on membership back then too, KT.
I did. I did. So that was more me offering my services again. When I came back, I didn't come back to anything set. I knew there was going to be I need to find something. And so Norwood, I went to Dom Shepley, I think it was, and said, look, I might be able to help in a few areas, you know, while I'm waiting. And Norwood were kind enough to give me that opportunity. And so I was playing around there. Lee Wicker helped me also with some work with the SMA, you know, like it was at the start of building Adelaide Oval. And so I was tasked with thinking about the arena and how would we commercialize it. So that was really interesting. I got an insight into how that would all work. And, you know, and so I was playing with that. And then the Port Adelaide job became available. And I was then at a point in my career where I was thinking, I made the split from footy. I've done a fair bit. Wouldn't it be cool to apply what I've learned in the business environment and apply it back in a football environment? Wouldn't that be an interesting thing to do? And so I started thinking like that, and then the Port Adelaide opportunity became available because, again, through my connections with Lee Wicker, Lee was familiar with what I was thinking, what I was doing, and whatever. And he said, well, why don't you put your hand up for that? And I did. And then I went through that process.
Yeah.
Which was interesting.
Okay. So you've decided you're going to have a crack for the Port job.
Yep. Yes.
When were you told how bad their financial situation was?
That was going to be my question too.
And how did that then affect your thought process?
Well, I was never told how bad the finances were. Right. What was obvious, though, was this period took a few months to work through. So I was going along to Port Adelaide games, and I was watching a train wreck. You know, like I was watching them lose by 100 points. You know, and games, you know, they lost. There was a famous loss to Gold Coast, first time that ever won a game. You know, so I knew that something was really bad and that they were trying to cost cut, but it wasn't until I was in the Port Adelaide environment that I really understood the full extent. And that took less than 2 or 3 days, to be honest. In that first week, we lost both of our Guernsey sponsors as well. So we were already at a low ebb, and then we lost my ATM and another one. And so we had no sponsors, a really underperforming, poor football team, a very divided membership base, which I understood because I had a conversation with a guy on the hill at Adelaide Oval. We played a game against Melbourne.
Which
was a precursor to Adelaide Oval coming a bit later on. And this guy, he told me something. He was just a supporter standing, and I said, How do you think about Port Adelaide? You know, like he said, look, I'm a lifelong supporter, but I love the Magpies. I barrack for the Power because I'm Port Adelaide, but my heart is with the Magpies, and I think they're being treated really badly by our club. And I thought about that. I thought, I had no idea about that dynamic.
Pretty observant, actually.
It was a fantastic piece of advice, and it actually shaped a lot of our thinking and our strategy for the first 2 or 3 years, and about how do you unite the club so that the focus is on winning games of footy at the AFL level, which is where the primary responsibility was, but not at the expense of the Magpies. How do you bring both of them along so that they're both competitive, and how do you unite a membership that feels divided?
Neglected, yeah.
And I thought if we could do that, by the time we got to Adelaide Oval, we might have something. And that was the plan.
I still think there's a hell of a lot of people out there who don't have really understand how bad Port's situation was, and how close they were to going under. And I just think that would have been pretty easy to have gone in there and gone shit. Didn't realise it was this hard, this bad. This is just too hard.
You know? Well, I didn't realise until much later, because clearly the stakeholders wouldn't tell me, but I didn't realise that the whole thing was at risk. And it was. I'm not going to go into the details. It's a bit too specific, but it had to turn around. And it had to turn around quickly, it was at real risk of falling over, the club. And I started to get a sense of that, but in a way, that's also liberating, because what we were able to do was take great risks. I thought that the mandate for me was you got to make improvements. Now the SANFL owned the license when I took over.
Yep.
And their approach was we got to save. And I remember very clearly going to the SANFL commission saying, there is no way Port Adelaide can save its way out of this problem. You have to invest, and we have to invest. Now, the issue was, where do you spend the limited amount of money you've got to make the most impact? And that's where the Ken Hinckley and Darren Burgess decisions become really pivotal. Because we didn't have the money to invest in Burgess. We didn't have, if we'd asked for approval, we wouldn't have got that approval. So we didn't ask, we just did it. But what that enabled us to do, and so Hinckley and Alan Richardson and Burgess, right? So that was the change dynamic, along with Koshy, that started the propulsion towards Adelaide Oval, and that was at the start of 2013. So we'd spent 2012 understanding the landscape, and we did a few things. We were investing in the footy program, and I was having a good look at Matty Primus and trying to work out what was needed. But what I understood, and what the whole group understood, was that the ticking time bomb was Adelaide Oval 2014, because what I had said to the group was, we have got to enter Adelaide Oval running, not dribbling. We're not going to dribble into Adelaide Oval. And I was saying that because the financial model had us requiring 40,000 people going to the games and 40,000 members. We didn't have any of that, right? Yeah. So we were 13,000 people going to the games and 20,000 members. So the financial model at Adelaide Oval was really enticing, but it required you to be good. Yeah, you had to. You actually had to be playing really good footy and doing things differently and better. So that gave us basically the second half of 2012 and 2013 to create change and a change mindset. And, you know, in those few years, I thought we were very innovative, very brave. We made big calls and, you know, thankfully, you know, Kenny came in, got us going really quickly. By the way, you know, there was bravery in the way that he played the game. You know, like it was
attacking,
fast and furious and attacking
and
take it all on. And that was symbolic of the Port Adelaide mindset in that moment. And it caught on. And so when we hit Adelaide Oval, I think you remember, you know, like we felt as if we, you know, we really put a lot into, you know, I remember the village, you know, that we did a good
job with that. Yeah.
Never tear us apart. You know, we did a whole range of concerts. We really tried hard to change how it felt to go to a game of footy.
Well, I can't listen to that bloody song now because it's poor. I think
I know.
You did a brilliant job with that. And in all fairness, I think it, you know, it's unique. You know, I feel like getting a gun out when they all start singing it. But
it was one thing that brought both supporter groups together. It was genius, really.
I do think in all seriousness, it was brilliant. And as much as I also can say it, being heavily involved in Adelaide Uni Footy Club, I was quite often over at Uni Oval doing things. I might be in the change rooms just doing something, and there was way more noise at a Port game than what there was at a Crows game. And I always thought that was pretty significant and full of praise.
I'll tell you the underlying sentiment and genius behind Never Tear Us Apart was that we'd been to Liverpool at Anfield and heard Never Walk Alone.
Yeah.
Because Burgess was part of the Liverpool
program, right?
So he got us, the whole club went, all the players went, and the boys came out of that and said, we've got to do something like that.
But okay.
It's not easy to come up with the right song, and a lot of clubs have tried it.
Yeah.
What makes Never Walk Alone work is that it means something. It's underpinned by something that's real.
Yeah.
Never Tear Us Apart was the symbol of the Port Adelaide membership, the Magpies and the Power coming together under the one Port Adelaide umbrella, which George Fiacci and Tim Ginever fought so hard for, you know, from late 2009 and onwards. And we picked that up and ran with it. And Never Tear Us Apart was that moment. Our language was about unity. And we are Port Adelaide and redefined. We actually took it back to core Port Adelaide values, which the Port Adelaide people understood. They got it. And Never Tear Us Apart struck a chord. And that's why it works.
And
you can't fake those things.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's as strong now as it ever was tells you that it worked.
Yeah. And look, let's also be honest. In terms of the AFL level, they're not the traditional footy clubs. They're corporate entities.
Yeah.
They're corporations because they have to be because they're mammoth. You know, they're huge, and that's where your involvement with Austereo and you getting that, how much that influenced your thought process for the whole China bit? Because I think that was brilliant, what you did with China. To do that in that length of time and get to a profit situation, I think was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. So you got to – yes. I'm certain that it had a very large influence because – the Nova, you've got to remember, Nova did not exist.
Yep.
We built it from the ground up. And our thinking, the mantra was, sounds different. We were going to be the first FM network for 25 years or something. And so it was the year 2000. It was a brand new high tech environment, and we wanted to change the way that radio sounded and acted, and we did. And we did incredibly unique and innovative things on a national scale, and we broke the mold. So that mindset empowered me in the Port Adelaide environment, because I knew the power of encouraging people to think outside the square. And Koshy was a very similar thinker. So for us, we worked well together for that reason. And so when it came to China, my cell into, you know, Matty Richardson and I were probably the people that were that first came up with the idea of doing it. The rationale behind it was, I didn't believe, and I don't believe, that Port Adelaide can survive commercially if it doesn't have a point of difference outside of its own market.
Yeah.
If you think about where we sit, you know, we're the smaller of two AFL clubs in a small market.
Oh, it's, and people don't realise how small the market in Adelaide is.
Well, again, I'd been working in Sydney and Melbourne with Nova, and I understood how they thought about Adelaide commercially.
Yep.
So my pitch to the board was, if we can create, we're going to find it really hard to survive on local dollars alone, and to convince big national Australian-based companies to invest with us as opposed to Adelaide, we're going to be battling really hard to do what we need to do. But if we can create a new market, a different market of organizations that have an interest in China, and we can attract them through footy and us building a bridge to China, maybe we can create a point of difference.
Yeah.
And that then turned into, yeah, that's okay. Our first plan was not to play a game over there. It was simply to create a commercial bridge, right? But the feedback we were getting was, it doesn't make sense unless you're playing a game there, because China don't have any idea about what it is, where the AFL is, or the game is, or what Australia is, basically, really. So you needed a landmark event to draw their attention to it. And so that raised the stakes a bit, because then you had to get the AFL approving it and whatever. Yeah. But the fundamental idea was, how do we create a commercial point of difference for Port Adelaide that will separate it from everyone else? And because China was a really important trading partner, we felt like that there was going to be Australian businesses that wanted to do business in China. We thought that China was interested in Australia, and at that time they really were. And so we got about it.
Liking this podcast? Please like, rate, and subscribe.